The second story is entitled The Morning After. The year was 10,000,001 according to Hellenian calendar, and Commander Xenex was maneuvering the craft for touchdown in what had been the parking lot of all that remained of a regional shopping center. The heavy growth of thick vines and undergrowth made it very difficult and tricky to find a place that was level and clear enough to land safely. The gravity modification vortex dynamo was working smoothly, enabling the craft to maneuver with precision, hanging, hovering in the sky, slowly settling down. An old calendar clock combination barely hanging on an outside wall was charred, barely supported by a severely destroyed building. It remained stuck frozen on the date of December 25th, 1990, 2 p.m., That had been 1,011 Earth years earlier, making the Earth date of the aliens' landing 3,001 A.D. Earth date. The Earth, by that date, had been decimated by nuclear world war, so there were no humans to mark the date or welcome the aliens. The Hellenians had been aware of the Earth for the last 10 Earth years, but were unable to secure much information because of their home planet, of Helena, 8 light years away, made it difficult and time consuming in securing data on the water planet. This was their first reconnaissance flight to Earth. The trip had taken over 9 Earth years at nearly the speed of light. Xenon was the first to disembark from the spacecraft. Xenon, reporting to Xenex, said, "Commander Xenex, it is such a large structure that it must have been some kind of religious temple to worship the universe of God." "Yes, Exnan, the structure contains certain symbolic designs that would indicate spherical connection to the universe. See that fallen circular-shaped wheel at the end of the building? That is possibly evidence that the universal light source was worshipped." The building was little more than a burned-out hull, for on December 25, 1990, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, unknown to the Hellenians, an atomic airburst at 2,500 feet had effectively devastated the city and shopping center. The scouts had reported back that the main building was laid out so the skylights were in exact alignment with the water planet sun. Other data computated and synthesized the fact that inside many cupels was found shreds of clothing that must have been worshiping robes. The aliens wandered through the ruins for no more than 3 degrees of the sun, taking radiation readings as they explored. The levels were still very high, being lethal to humans, but the Hellenians basked in the radiation because it was a level of intensity that was not lethal to their biosystems, but one that elevated them to a higher mindset level. Exnan turned to Commander Xenex, making a quizzical statement. "There was probably a religious war, don't you think so, Commander Xenex?" "Yes, a high probability," said Commander Xenex. Diana slowly dragged herself out of bed early that morning. It was the morning after Thanksgiving, the year 1990. Punching down hard on the radio clock, she almost knocked it off the night table. Don didn't wake up, thank goodness. He just rolled over. She realized as she was rubbing the sleep out of her eyes that she would have to do battle today to secure for her family the necessities they had to have. Diana groped her way down the hallway of their 3-bedroom, 2-bath home, housing her husband Don and their 2.2 children, Sam and Kathy. She glanced at the kitchen clock. Oh, hell, cussing out loud. She only had 30 minutes to make it to the shopping center. Even then, she would still be an hour early. For to be at the head of the line or not would mean success or failure. Dressing frantically, she pulled on her old jogging shoes and jogging suit. A woman mustn't wear her best on a day like this. No time for full makeup, just splash on some light makeup, a little blush, waterproof mascara, and she quickly lined her eyebrows. Time to hit the door. Driving to the center, a light rain fell, and on the radio, the song African Rainbow intoned. The automatic transmission, shifting ever so smoothly, allowed her to concentrate on thinking about her shopping safari. She drove on another 15 minutes, becoming more hardened the nearer she got to the center, translating to the fact that no one in this world was going to stop her from her goal. Glancing in the rearview mirror, she noticed that one of the eyebrows was vampire-like. She would have to set that straight before getting out of the car. Rounding the corner, Diane could see the front of Super Shoppers Mart, truly the discount store of all discount stores. The rest of the stores in the shopping center weren't open yet. The combination calendar clock at the end of the building read 6 a.m., the 23rd of November, 1990. Good. There stood no more than 100 women in front of the main entrance. She smiled. She had a chance. She could see the way, the path, and the goods, a piece of cake. About 30 minutes before the front doors were open, an assistant manager placed a sign in the front window. It read, "All sales will be final upon leaving the store. No refunds, no rain checks, or exchanges." Gosh, a ripple. A rumor rippled through the crowd, inciting the women to near riot. The ad that had attracted all the women in the newspaper to the store stated that all refunds and exchanges would be honored as normal business, including rain checks. Several women passed the newspaper ad throughout the crowd. There must have been some of these young, insidious Renaissance ladies, you know, the ones that always show up at Renaissance fairs, dressed in gowns, calling each other lady this and lady that. Someone found an old signpost. In no time, several others had wrapped plastic bags around the end, making it into a battering ram, probably suggested by those ladylike or unladylike Renaissance girls. Just as they finished making up the battering ram, they started chanting. The battle cry went up. Get the corporate raiders to hell with the junk bonds. Get the corporate raiders to hell with the junk bonds. Junk bonds, junk store, junk bonds, junk store. Chanting, the crowd, including Diana, first started shouting the chants, but a couple minutes later they were yelling the chant, nearly bursting their lungs. This whipped the crowd into a frenzy. They commenced battering the front door open. The door gave way and the women streamed into the store. This mass of humanity streaming into the store heard thrash music, unbeknownst to top management. Some neophyte assistant manager had substituted his own thrash music tape for the normal mood music tape. The music did nothing to quieten the mad women, but further activated them to commence moshing between the aisles, a virtual madhouse. The thrash metal music activated some ex-punk ladies to set up a mosh pit in front of the service counter, and they commenced to force the service clerk to mosh dive into the pit. Some formerly Gentile ladies started tearing the displays down while others, like Diana, grabbed what they had come for and got through the checkout lines as quickly as possible. On the way out with her receipts in one hand and her purchases in the other, all hell broke loose. The few men that had come with the women, mostly wimps and sissies, had taken refuge in the snack bar. All Diana could see were little beady eyes shockingly peering over the snack bar counter. Children were running everywhere, throwing notebook paper hither and fro. Sales clerks were running for their lives. Diana hurried out and watched from outside the store. A helicopter was hovering over the store, lowering down a SWAT team. The SWAT team ran into the store, firing rubber bullets and tear gas everywhere. Huge clouds of tear gas drifted over the scene. Two policemen grabbed Diana, frisking her and quizzing her about her Christmas purchases. Diana had receipts, so they released her. She couldn't believe what was happening. A total riotous situation broken out. Diana continued watching from a parking lot while some women with non-bulletproof, waterproof mascara streaming down their faces were being led from the store. Others, half-clothed, were using bath towels, which they had not purchased to preserve decency. Diana stayed witnessing this whole debacle until they had loaded the last rioters on the last bus. There had been too many arrested for teeny-weeny little paddy wagons. Diana never saw any of those women again, for in Diana's world of 1990, the worst crime wasn't against the state. A corporate crime was a far worse offense. It was, in fact, a sin. A month later, she found herself and her family sitting in their living room on Christmas morning. They were opening their presents. Sam pulled out his new jeans, hung in his mom. He said, "Mom, the boys at school can't make fun of me because I've got cowboy jeans now." Sam ran to the bedroom to try on his new jeans. Diana looked over at Kathy just as her new doll's head fell off. Then Sam ran back in the living room complaining that the zipper on his jeans was broken. Don, holding up his new sports shirt, said, "Honey, two buttons are missing." Diana, in a panic, found her own present and hurriedly tore open the wrapping paper off the package, extracting the pantyhose from the box. She noticed an unexplainable run in the pantyhose. Diana was completely demoralized, for she had made so many sacrifices to buy those presents for her family at that supposedly terrific discount sale. With her big frown, with a big frown on her face, she placed her arm around Don and said, "War is hell, isn't it, honey?" Don replied, "Yes, war is hell."